This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
There's a place in northern New York, a Girl Scout camp in the woods, where for years girls have gone to learn about nature and the outdoors and the value of loyalty and friendship. That camp ran into financial problems and had to close, but now a group of the camp's supporters have given it new life.
As a child, Camp Little Notch was exactly what I needed. It was a place that was completely accepting and supportive.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, the story of Camp Little Notch. We'll also cross the ocean and visit a European kindergarten in the woods. And we'll spend an academic minute finding out why Western forests in the U.S. are feeling the heat. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Nestled in the small town of Fort Anne in New York's Washington County, Camp Little Notch was a Girl Scout camp where girls for decades learned about nature and friendship. When the camp was in financial trouble, former Little Notch campers, counselors, and supporters from around the nation and around the globe joined together to ensure the conservation of the Little Notch property. Since 2009, the Friends of Camp Little Notch have also formed lasting relationships with many local and national conservation groups, and these organizations have also been crucial to the preservation of Little Notch. After being closed for 4 years, the Friends will reopen Camp Little Notch as a national outdoor recreation and education center for use by a wide range of individuals and community groups this summer. The Best of Our Knowledge's Joe Donahue recently spoke with Joe Lum, board president of the Friends of Camp Little Notch, and Ellen Tizzulo, the executive director of Camp Little Notch.
So here's the thing that I'm fascinated about this. This camp is in Fort Anne in Washington County. I live in Greenwich in Cambridge. And every friend I have for the last year and a half has told me about this story. And they've Facebooked me, and they've told me, and they've collared me in the store. And
I said,
you have to do this. And suddenly I thought it was one person just doing it. And then I realized, no, it was like this army of people. So to the masses that you have, I'm thrilled that you're here today to talk about this, because they're really the friends who came together to save this place. And all of you have just done an amazing job. So It's a very cool story. Now, what happened with the camp? It had been in business for a long, long time. What, 80 years, is that?
70 years, yeah.
Yeah, 70 years.
Girl Scout camp, yep.
Okay, and then what happened?
Yeah, so we were open as a Girl Scout camp in the summer of 2008, and Ellen and I were working there together. And as you already noted, we have a really amazing community of people who are just supporters of this camp, who have just had really life-changing experiences from going there or from working there.
Yeah.
So when the Girl Scouts announced at the end of the summer of 2008 that they were going to close the camp, what we did was we started, or Friends of Camp Little Notch, and started to try and work with the Girl Scouts to get them to preserve the property. But ultimately, their board of directors announced that they were going to sell the camp. So at that time, we decided that we were going to purchase it. So we partnered with Open Space Institute and put in a joint offer to purchase the property for the asking price of $3.95 million.
Pocket change.
Yeah, no big deal, right?
Dumb money.
Exactly. So what happened was Friends of Camp Little Notch actually raised $25,000 in 4 days to put in for this the purchase of the property. So we worked with Open Space and Joe Martens and Katie Stone at Open Space Institute to then purchase the property. And Open Space closed in November of 2010 with the Girl Scouts, and then immediately sold about 1,900 acres of the property to the sustainable forestry company Meadows End Timberlands Limited,
right,
under a conservation easement, which is great. So 1,900 acres of the original Camp Little Notch property is already preserved under a conservation easement. So that was one of our main goals. So the remaining portion of the property, which is about 443 acres, we're going to be purchasing from the Open Space Institute over the next 3 years. So we have 3 years to raise the $1.1 million to purchase our 443 acres, also under an easement. So that's one of the main things that we're doing right now, is fundraising to purchase the property in addition to fundraising to operate the summer program.
So, in a nutshell, and you did it beautifully, but basically, keeping it open, I mean, obviously that will defray the cost of actually running it, but I assume will some of that money also go into help raising the money, or is that a wash? of the kids coming to the camp over the summer.
Yes, but our hope is eventually to be completely financially sustainable with the summer program. But in the 3 years that we'll be operating the program, some of that money will go towards the purchase price.
In the meantime, you need a lot of extra money and need a lot more help, and that's great. So
I mean,
because you're energized, and it's easier to do it when you can show people what you're doing and how you've helped.
Yeah, and we have a huge support group. Our membership has just been so supportive. We actually have a program called Adopt an Acre, where for $5,000. Someone can.
They don't give up.
I know.
They pester and they're lovely people.
I know.
And that's
they're
the other
just,
thing.
I mean, Little Notch is really important to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so we have had a lot of our members who are, you know, working class people who have pledged to adopt an acre over the next 3 years and actually pay us $130 or $140 a month to adopt an acre of Little Notch because they are so dedicated to the work we're doing.
The Girl Scouts ran it as a camp. And so how will you run it in the sense of, I know, and I want to get into how other people can use it as well, use the space.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the, is it still just for girls?
The summer program will be just for girls.
Okay.
That's right. And I did want to tell you a little bit about my personal connection, because I think this is a story that will really speak to why so many people love Little Notch so much. And we're pestering about getting us on the air.
So how long ago were you there?
So I started going in 1988.
Okay.
And as a child, it was Camp Little Notch was exactly what I needed. It was a place that was completely accepting and supportive. And for me, no matter how many times my parents told me I was a wonderful kid, it was really hard for me to accept that because I had kids at school who were telling me other things. So I was too tall, I was too outspoken, I was different, and school was a really hard place for me. But Camp Little Notch, like I said, was this place that really encouraged me and supported me in being myself. There was this community that we're talking about of powerful, resourceful, caring women who I just couldn't wait to learn everything that I could from. And those are those same people who are now supporting us and being able to continue to provide that space to generations of girls to come.
Now, so my question, and I don't quite know how to ask it because I don't really know what I'm talking about, but in the sense that the Girl Scouts have organization throughout the country, so they would send girls to the camp. So where are you going to still work with the Girl Scouts and other organizations to get the girls to come to the camp, or how does that work? So who will be coming now? Where is the list, if you will, coming from of where these kids will be hailing from?
That's a great question. We've been working really hard on outreaching to all types of schools and community organizations. We've done a lot of outreach in the Saratoga area, also where our office is, with the Waldorf School, with the Free School in Albany. We also have flyered the entire Albany School District. We've been communicating with organizations such as Refugees to Camp. There's just a recent article about them, with the Girls Incorporated. Yeah, so we've been really getting the word out there. We have a lot of people who some of whom you met, who are really spokespeople who are going out to their community organizations, churches, schools, places where they work, and spreading the word. So we've been working very hard on that outreach.
Do you have a sense of how many kids will be coming in the summer yet?
Our goal is to have 180 kids, so 60 kids a session. So that's the target.
Okay. And and going okay so far?
It's going okay. We definitely need more campers. And this was one of the reasons why we're so glad to have this opportunity to really tell people why they should sign their kids up for Camp Little Notch and how important an experience it's been to us.
The two of you are young. And you're
yeah.
taking the, which is the way it should be in the sense of taking the world by storm here. It goes, if you allow me this, it goes to show what the camp has provided the two of you. You're an alum too, I assume?
Yes, I am. It's actually interesting because Ellen was my camp counselor. So, I went to camp Little Notch from 1995 to 2000, and then I worked there 2006, 7, and 8. The last 3 years we were open as a Girl Scout camp. And for me, Little Notch, one of the things that was so important, I mean, it meant so much to me when I was a kid, similarly to Ellen, I felt kind of ostracized. I had a hard time in high school. I grew up in Cambridge, so it was a small town that I had a hard time like in high school, in public high school. But Little Notch was always this place that I just felt so safe. I felt so supported. And, you know, Ellen was a really big part of that for me, was like really making camp a place where I felt, you know, special. And one of the greatest honors that I had was then when I got to become a counselor, and I was the counselor and training director, watching my campers have the same experience in growing into leaders. And now that we're reopening again, it's like, I'm going to get a little choked up talking about it, but my kids who were so devastated when the camp closed as a Girl Scout camp, now they have this opportunity to come back and be leaders and in this place. And it's just really amazing to see. So,
well, it is amazing, and you should be very proud of what you've accomplished, in the sense that in basically 4 years, to bring this group together, to be able to do what you do is darn impressive.
Yeah, we joke about this all the time. When we decided that we were going to purchase Camp Little Notch, we actually had $3,500 in our bank account.
Yeah, we were like, we'll buy it, 3.95, whatever.
And, you know, I think it's really a testament to what supportive, nurturing spaces can do for people, to really, you know, instill in people, and young girls especially, this sense that there's possibility in the world, and that there's a world that we can, that's open to us, to be able to do amazing things.
Now, I have been there, and I have to say that it's gorgeous.
You've been to Little Notch. Yeah,
well, I mean, not to like stay or anything. You know, they escorted me off the property, but I went in for an event, but it was really cool. And I just, it's a beautiful place. And, and I think, you know, the stunning beauty of it.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, it's why I live there, but Washington County is absolutely gorgeous. And this is sort of just a jewel in the crown.
Yeah.
But one of the things that, from what I understand, is not only will you offer this to the girls who will camp, but it will also be open for other events as well.
Yeah, let me tell you about that.
Yeah.
We are going to have a week and a half in August, from the August 3rd to the 12th. I wrote down all my dates, that we are calling All Friends Camping. So that's when anybody can come. You can come with your family. You can come with whoever you want and stay at Little Notch. And at the end, we're going to have sort of a culmination of events where we'll have a big banquet to, you know, celebrate and be together. And then we're going to have a our annual membership meeting, because Friends of Camp Little Notch is a membership-based organization. So people like myself who are on the board of directors need to be elected by our members. So we're going to do that. And then we also have a women's weekend and a family camp, and another sort of like fall camping event, which is Columbus Day weekend. So those are events that anybody, adults, can come to. Because, you know, a lot of people, when we talk about our program, we really do want Little Notch to be for all people. And that includes boys, and that includes adults. And people get excited when they hear about the program and what we're doing, but then sometimes are sad when, you know, they think, oh, well, my son can't come to camp.
Right.
And I say, oh, yes, he can, and so can you.
Yeah.
And really see what Little Notch, how special it is. Because I really think that what's been guiding our success this whole time has really been that land. I mean, the power and the beauty of that land has really been behind us, and that's what's got us to here.
Well, it's a beautiful story, and congratulations to the two of you, and to everyone who have really rallied together to get you as far as you've gotten so far.
Thank you.
You can go to friendsofcln.org for more information if you'd like to find out about being a friend. You can also go to camplittlenotch.org and find out more information about what's going on and about the actual programs themselves.
Joe Lum is board president of the Friends of Camp Little Notch, and Ellen Tizzillo is the executive director of Camp Little Notch in Fort Ann, New York. They spoke with the Best of Our Knowledge's Joe Donahue. Still to come, some preschoolers in Europe are also learning about the great outdoors. That's next on the Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about the Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past shows again, or subscribe to our podcast, you can find us online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for the Best of Our Knowledge, number 1131. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. In Joe's discussion of Camp Little Notch, he and his guests talked about the importance of kids interacting with the natural world, something that's been called very beneficial to our development. But free-range children with space to roam outdoors whenever they like can be a rare thing. Children spend less of their time playing in the mud these days and more of their time indoors with media. But there's a movement in Northern Europe that's getting kids outside at an early age with the hopes of keeping them there. Balder Kindergartens, or Forest Kindergartens, are daycares which get kids into the forest all day, no matter what the weather's like, without toys. Radio Netherlands' Anik C. went to one of the deepest, darkest forests of Germany to find out more.
It's so easy to stay inside these days. I think a lot of people, in colder climes anyway, would count that as one of our greatest achievements. Comfort. The ability to tame nature enough to stay away from it. But all across Northern Europe, a movement has started to counter that. And it started with toddlers. Meet the kids of the Fuchsbauwald Kindergarten near Freiburg in Germany's Black Forest. Their day starts by putting lots of layers of clothing on and heading up a trail into the forest. They need those layers of warm clothes because they spend their kindergarten time outside. All of it. If the weather gets extreme, they'll go inside a small trailer in the forest, but the idea is to have them be outside as much as possible, to keep them connected to nature. That's why Günther Wittmann started his own forest kindergarten.
I thought that the education in the nature and the experience for children in the nature to become familiar with all life. We smell all. So I thought it's really good for developing. It started in Germany in 91, this moving from the Scandinavian countries. It became a wave here.
And why? Why do you think it's so popular?
I think it's a kind of feeling if we have, if society is not going the right way, go back a little bit to the nature. So it's a balance for a better development of the children.
So it's a sort of reaction to too much technology and...
I think so, yeah. It's not... maybe it's not so conscious, but it's half conscious and half just a feeling that comes from inside.
Günther and his assistants, Mike and Alexander, are taking the kids up into the forest to bake some bread in an outdoor wood-fired oven today. But there's plenty of distraction on the way up. As Günther and I are talking, the kids discover a pile of sand that was dumped by the trail overnight and drop down and start making a sandcastle. One of the girls comes over to me, and I ask her what she's going to add to the castle.
Und was machen Sie hier?
I have leaves, she tells me.
Ich habe Blätter.
Beautiful ones.
Schöne.
Yellow ones.
Gelbe.
And she and the other kids use them to decorate the castle.
The normal contact with water, with mud, all sensual things that they can have in the hand. And it's not all cleaned up and like if you would be in a... other kindergarten. It's more contact with elementary things. This is one of the main points that the Waldkindergarten should be relatively free of industrial made toys. A stick like that could be a weapon, could be a shovel, could be all. Just a fantasy create that, yeah? And this is good for thinking and this is relatively important for speaking.
You'll notice the lack of crying. In 2 hours, with 13 kids between the ages of 18 months and 4 years old, I think one kid cried for about 15 seconds. But it goes beyond that.
One of the most critical points that children think about Waldkindergarten is, what would my boy or my girl do after 3 or 4 years in the Waldkindergarten? They're just running around, they don't learn. How can they sit down, be quiet? The teacher here in this school in Kappel, in this part of Freiburg, she says that the Waldkindergarten children are more silent and are more able to sit down and be quiet, and they are not so nervous like others.
Up at the outdoor wood stove, the fire is being prepared. One of the kids is trying to light a match, but it's not working. So they say a magic chant. And it works.
It's our magic sentence.
But it's not just the kids who get something out of this.
If children have a knowledge of a process of coming and going, of if they are familiar to things, and if they like it, they respect the nature, and they will be responsible in the future for that. I like to be outside, to have it a little bit cold, and after that, to enjoy the warmth, the extremes, yes.
I like extremes too. And of all the best moments in my childhood, the ones I remember the most all took place outside. Imagine giving the kids that every day.
That report from Radio Netherlands, Aniek C. Many forests in the American West are in increasing danger of being destroyed by fire. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Each season, we hear about wildfires decimating thousands of acres. As Northern Arizona University's Regents Professor Wally Covington explains, although the fires damage the ecology for generations, there are ways to restore forests.
One of today's greatest conservation challenges is the decline of forests that evolved with frequent low-intensity surface fires. These forests now burn with high-intensity crown fires on a scale of 500,000 acres, an area half the size of Long Island. We are seeing these changes throughout the dry forest of the West. The outlook is grim. Climate change is bringing extreme drought and high winds, both of which exacerbate the problem. These landscapes were once dominated by open, park-like forest, kept open by naturally occurring frequent surface fires. That all changed with Euro-American settlement and the introduction of heavy livestock grazing. Grazing removed the grasses across vast landscapes, effectively eliminating natural fires. In the absence of these fires, tree populations erupted to levels far beyond the carrying capacity of the land. Natural fire regimes once limited tree densities at 10 to 60 trees per acre. Today, 500 to 1,000 trees per acre is the norm. These excessive tree densities have shifted the role of fire from maintaining forest health to a destructive force that can impair ecosystems for centuries. All is not lost. For example, in Arizona, the Four Forest Restoration Initiative is working to restore 2.4 million acres that stretches from the Grand Canyon to the New Mexico border. Other landscape restoration efforts are spreading throughout the West. Today, many of us are optimistic about getting on top of the problem. If we are successful, future generations will have healthy forests that are an asset instead of a liability.
That was Northern Arizona University's Wally Covington. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors on our website, academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Shartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at wamc.org.